Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran.
All right, I need a link, Tony. I need a link sent my way. Why am I not seeing Kiper's second mock draft when I go to ESPN.com? You would think that would be heavily featured on the front page.
I would think so. I mean, it's easy enough to find McShay's.
Right. I see McShay's updated. I see his latest mock, which from like 2 weeks ago, and I also see his updated top 32. I have not seen Kiper's second mock, but we'll dig that up some point today. Did you find it?
Yeah, just find his Twitter, because he linked it out.
Oh, did he? Okay. Yeah. I don't know why it's not. Did he just? He must have just sent that out recently.
2 hours ago.
All right, that's interesting that I couldn't find it on there. Well, I will backdoor my way into the mock draft area. We'll check out what Mel has to say. Ryan O'Halloran's in the house. You have a good week? Everything good?
Yeah. We're not to sound all Todd McShay-ish here, but I've spent a lot of time digging into these combine.
Have you been watching the film?
I haven't. I take the approach that works best for me is I basically try and put together my own combine media guide, which is these college media guides are god awful. So you got to search, you got to scratch for these statistics and background information so that when you go up there, you know something about most of these guys, and you can start finding trends. You know, you can see if there's a lot of centers in this draft that have started a lot of games. There's some free safeties who've made a lot of tackles, that kind of thing, created turnovers. So trying to get a feel because, let's face it, I don't follow college football a ton during the regular season outside of Florida State. And so it's a lot of, you know, getting familiar with some of the guys you're going to be hearing about. And then, you know, I mean, I may watch some guys on YouTube later, but that's out of my realm of expertise.
Right, yeah. Right. And look, there are people that made themselves into self-styled draft nicks that watch that stuff and know what to look for, and that's fine. You know,
one thing I would watch when I do some Ramsey stuff, I just want to see where he lines up. That's the kind of things I look for. And if you like if a Bosa, right side, left side, interior, any that kind of stuff, you know, if a guy's got good bend, they're going to have to tell me.
Right. I think you can probably see that if you really know what to look for, but I don't try to
put
myself in that category.
Athletic. Right? Like, that's the kind of thing that you can see. I don't know that I can see all the little, like, skills that you have to play these positions.
Hand placement.
Right. You can watch somebody and say, man, he wins a lot. You know, you can see those types of things even if you are just a layman watching, you know, YouTube video of what these guys are doing. And, you know, I've gone back and watched a little bit of Bosa, a little bit of Tunsil, that kind of thing. I'm no expert, but I can watch them and go, ooh, I can see why these guys are being talked about as top five prospects in the draft because they win a lot of their matchups in these games individually.
One thing, Mike, you mentioned during our chat with Dan was you look at the rankings having Ramsey and Bosa.
Bosa and Ramsey were the top two.
Okay. Where that's an overall ranking. This is, you know, this is probably going to still be a quarterback heavy. You know, if two quarterbacks go in the top five, if a left tackle goes in.
Look, if two quarterbacks go in the top five, the Jags should be licking their chops.
Yeah, and so I think there's, like, how this draft ends up, I think there's still a good chance that they at least have their shot at one of those guys. I'd be surprised if one of them's not on the board.
Ramsey or Bosa.
Correct.
I'm not convinced there are going to be two quarterbacks that go in the top five right now. Certainly a team could trade in there. We know Tennessee's not going to take one. They say they're open for business. Any team with the first pick wants to get blown, especially in a pretty good draft, right, where it seems like there are, you know, maybe 10 impact-type players, right, and you could slide back and get a really good playmaker to help you on either side of the football if you're the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, it's interesting, this draft right now, where you said there's a lot of playmakers, which is true, but not a ton of marquee. It's not a marquee receiver draft.
No.
Top-heavy. There's no tight ends.
No, there's not. But,
so, but there's other guys to make up for that, so there's good value at other positions this year, whereas before there may not.
Right. It's more of a defensively, oriented playmakers draft. You know, you've got Noah Spence maybe putting himself in that conversation just based on talent. Russ Landy we had on yesterday, currently the college scouting director with the Alouettes up in the Canadian Football League, Montreal Alouettes, and he raved about DeForest Buckner. He said he will be a star in this league. In fact, he thinks he's a wonderful fit to play the Red Bryant role in Gus Bradley's defense. You know, he thinks, you know, has the ability, if you want him to slide inside on third down and stay on the field, he can rush the passer there. And that's the terminology he used. He said he will be a star in this league. Now, that's not a guy that we've discussed at length. He's been kind of the default next best defensive end until Noah Spence opened a lot of eyes at the Senior Bowl. But a lot of people think he's more of a defensive end for a 3-4 and not as not your traditional 4-3 end. But that 4-3 end position in Bradley's defense isn't your traditional guy.
Mm-hmm. One thing, and I saw you tweet this out, Landy was talking about Miles Jack.
Yes.
Why, you see some mocks with him going top 10. Why isn't the knee more of a concern than Russ?
Yeah. I don't know. I think he feels like, you know, it's going to be far enough removed from when it occurred at the beginning, towards the very beginning part of the football season, that, you know, this is based on the tape evaluation. When he looks at the tape, he can't sit there. He hasn't, you know, checked out the knee for Miles Jack, but he's saying if the knee passes muster based on the film, this is where I see him falling. This is where, you know, he compared him to Luke Kuechly. In fact, said he was the only guy, linebacker, coverage linebacker, they ever saw better in coverage than Kuechly on tape.
Look, I think it's next week is when that kind of stuff gets interesting, right? You got all the NFL minds all together, and that's when you can start asking these guys, why is Miles Jack, is he really a top five prospect in this draft? Is that knee not a concern to anybody that's drafting in the top five of the draft? You haven't had those guys together to ask that question.
Right.
And that's why the picture becomes a lot more clear once you start coming out of the combine, because everyone's had an opportunity to be in one place with all the minds of the NFL and try to get a better idea of what they're thinking. It's a big guessing game now, and I've been on the same boat. Miles Jack, as a top five draft pick coming off that major knee injury, I get that the tape may be outstanding, but the NFL, I've watched them be overly cautious for years and years and years when it comes to these kinds of things, and to see a guy like that in the top five, and to see Jalen Smith still be considered maybe a top 10 pick as well.
Yeah, to me, that's awesome.
Right, the top two linebackers in this draft
that
class,
seems
potentially.
Like a more significant injury.
Right. It's where are they really on these guys?
But don't you think, Tony, when you look at what happened with Todd Gurley last year, that can only help a guy like Miles Jack. Right?
Sure, and I think, look, when we asked Russ about the injury aspect versus the off-field aspect, he said, look, they fixed these guys, right? Like, ACL is not a death sentence in the National Football League anymore. It's something that these guys recover from, and they're fine, generally speaking, coming off that injury. Maybe it's not immediately, especially a guy like Miles Jack, Jalen Smith, maybe they're not going to be impact in the first two, three games of the season for you. But you're not drafting a guy because he's going to impact your team in September. You're drafting a guy in the top five because he's going to be impacting your team in 2019.
Right, for 5 to 10
right.
years.
That's why you draft that guy. And if you think he is Luke Kuechly, then I don't see a knee injury scaring you off of drafting Luke Kuechly because he happens to be hurt, if that's what you think he's going to be. But NFL teams have been overly cautious about that thing in the past. It's just not showing up to this point in mock drafts at all.
All right, today's question of the day, we already threw it out there with Dan Hicken, and it's going to be tough to top his litany of accomplishments.
Give me one thing, Dan.
This is the O'Halloran special today. And some people have taken this in a couple of different ways. Some people have already responded by putting a great moment in sports in their lifetime that it was impactful to them that they would get tattooed on their body. This is in honor of Allen Robinson getting a famous catch, at least, you know, a relatively famous catch that he had at Penn State over Michigan that was a big game changer for the Nittany Lions. And he had the scene where he's high-pointing the football over the defensive back's head tattooed on his rib cage and showed that off on social media yesterday. So for you personally, if you had to pick one great athletic moment from your lifetime that you would have emblazoned on your skin forever, what would it be? What would it look like? And what would that moment be? Like I mentioned here, like I might do one of my hole-in-ones, but what do you do? Do you do the celebration, fists in the air?
The follow, the swing.
No, you don't want my swing. You know what? Honestly, if I could do some kind of video tattooing and just see how bad my swing is that actually produced a hole-in-one, that might be worth having because it would it would give hope to golfers everywhere, you know, and it would taunt those the likes of Jeff Prosser and Frank Franchi, who are much better at golf than I am, yet who've never had a hole-in-one. It's okay. I have one for each of them, so it's all good. Yeah, so we'll talk about that a little bit today as well. Glad you're along. 641-1010 is the number if you'd like to get in, talk any aspect of Jaguar or NFL football here with us. You can also text us at that number, 904-641-1010, the Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback question of the day. We're looking for your responses on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at Ryan O'Halloran. And, of course, the Jaguars Today Facebook page is open for business as well. With Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union and Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. Jaguars Today continues in a moment, live from EverBank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Ideally, you're going to put him as your middle back because that guy can be your star like Luke Kuechly is in Carolina. He can upgrade the whole defense. And I will tell you, the reason I mentioned Kuechly is Kuechly was the best linebacker I'd ever graded in coverage.
Really?
Until I graded Miles Jack. Miles Jack is a spectacular coverage linebacker. He's not just good or solid. He is elite. He'll be able to cover tight ends, running backs, even slot receivers on short routes. He'll be able to do things that few linebackers in the NFL can do coverage-wise. And I think that's why, as long as his medical checks out and his pro day when he works out and he's full speed in March goes well, I think you're going to see him not only be the first linebacker, but potentially be the first defensive player taken, because there's no character questions with this kid. And as long as the medical checks out, I could see him jumping ahead of some of these other defensive players in the draft.
That was Russ Landy yesterday on the program, the current college scouting director for the Montreal Alouettes. Loves him some Miles Jack. Now, I'll say this. You may not count this as a character issue. Miles Jack, for a couple of years in a row at UCLA, got thrown out of fall practice because he couldn't control his temper. He's now, people may say, hey, you know what, I want that. That's okay. Those are the kinds of character issues. If that's your problem and you're my middle linebacker and you're too aggressive, I can work with that, but, you know, just not to completely whitewash his history. I mean, I'm not saying it's anything that anyone's going to hold against him. It may, as I said, be something that could be looked at as a positive in some ways. Hey, rein that in just a little bit, but we like the fiery temperament. But he got into it with, I think, a teammate in a practice this past season and got thrown out, you know, whatever. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world, but it is out there. You know, all these guys are going to be picked apart on these kind of things. You know, I'm sure he's going to be asked about that. Are you going to be able to keep your cool when it's 2 minutes left in the football game and you know, the AFC South title is on the line and those kind of things. Russ Landy does love him some Miles Jack, though. Top defensive player perhaps in the entire draft. Loves DeForest Buckner as well, Ryan. I mentioned he
6'7", 300.
Good. Yeah, oh, I know. He's more the Red Bryant type defensive end. If you're going to play him in a 4-3, certainly, and he may fit better simply with a 3-4 team.
Well, anybody who rings up Red Bryant, he sucked. He was terrible here.
That's not the point. Well, it's the role.
Well, it's like, okay, what does that mean? If you draft him fifth, what does that mean for Odrick?
Well, that means, obviously, that if you draft him, you think this guy has more pass rush potential. I'm not saying the Jags are going to draft him. I'm just saying this is Landy's evaluation of this guy. I'm not trying to push the DeForest Buckner to Jacksonville angle.
300 is interesting. It'd be interesting to see how he keeps his pad. You know, with a tall guy in tight space like that, it'd be interesting to see how he'd fit into a 4-3 defense.
I'm guessing that you know, he's been vetted on film and all this stuff. Kuiper's got him going third overall, but San Diego is a team with the third pick. They run a 3-4 scheme, and that's why I think people think he will be best suited as a 3-4 end. Those guys are impactful 3-4 defensive ends are sometimes hard to find, other than being just space eaters. He seems to be a guy that the pundits, the scouts, the self-styled scouts believe can hold up against the run and provide some pressure on the quarterback. So we'll see how that whole thing plays out. By the way, we'll go through some of the entries later on, but give us a Ryan O'Halloran moment that would be on the short list of consideration.
Well, you're right. It is a short list. It was probably 5-6 years ago, and before every Washington Capitals training camp, they'd have a media scrimmage where they'd have a little clinic. So you get on the skates, you put your helmet on, they give you a stick and gloves.
Did you grow up playing hockey?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
You know, so I've known how to skate all along. So then, you know, you have the players out there giving you some tips on face-offs and whatever. And so then you scrimmage, and big fella filled the lane, scored a goal.
Oh, nice. The big fella coming down on the break in the media hockey matchup.
But then I also, when I was in college, I was golfing, and I had this, you know, chip in from off the green, where if it didn't hit the stick and go in the hole, it'd probably be still rolling.
Yeah.
But it counted.
I had one of those last time I played at Sawgrass, but it was more than a chip. It was like from 15 feet away, and I hit a scalding line drive that hit right in the middle of the flag stick and dropped straight down about 4 inches from the hole. Couldn't do that again if I had 1,000 balls from that spot.
Yeah.
But that's the way it goes. Fat Tony, what about you?
For what?
For your greatest moment to be emblazoned on your ribcage.
I don't know. Like, since we brought up the question, I've been thinking about it. And honestly, I can go back to... I played some sports in high school, but never really won anything.
Uh-huh.
Right? Played some golf, played some football, that kind of thing, but never really had that moment that I'd want to immortalize. Honestly, I think it goes back to, like, the backyard football days, and I was 13, I want to say, at the time, and there was the high school senior in the neighborhood, so the older kid, right, that was super aggressive, and he used to play where it was tag in the street, tackle in the grass. Right.
Gotcha.
And this kid was on, like, the high school varsity team and everything, and he was kind of a bully in the neighborhood. So everybody would kind of run.
He was playing with the little kids, I would say.
I know. And so everyone would run on the street whenever this guy played, right? It was always tag with this guy whenever he played. Well, I'm running on the street, and he picks me up and spins me into the grass and then tackles me. And I'm like, well, if I'm just going to get tackled every time, then I'll just start playing in the grass too. So I was pretty pissed off about being beaten up, basically, on that play. So the next time I got the ball, I ran over to the grass, and the guy came in really, really hard and low on me, and he wound up flipping me. It completely flipped me, and I landed on my feet on the other side behind him and kept running and scored a touchdown. And the guy, like, I got the dude's respect, like, immediately after that. He kind of, like, calmed down, at least picking on me a little bit. But I could see the tattoo in my head of me flipping over somebody with a football in hand. That's a pretty cool image in my head.
That would be pretty cool. I don't know if you'd have to have like a three-parter with the trip,
right,
the flip,
like a cartoon
and
panel.
Stick the landing. Yeah. Yes, something like that.
I have a request. Hacker, your favorite moment.
Dirt. Had to be perhaps the time my pants practically split. That young lady scored a goal against me. Are you kidding me? In front of all those people in the stadium? I don't know if that's his greatest moment. But he also talked about the time, I think he hit Seatric Faison. He used to talk about spearing Seatric Faison in the back when he was a high school football player.
Yeah, something.
In some game. I remember him bragging about that. I may be getting my facts wrong. I don't know. Maybe he pushed him, got a hand on him, and helped push him out of bounds.
Right.
That was one of them. I don't know. I can't speak for Hack.
I can remember on the schoolyard one time, there was about a 350-pound guy played offensive tackle. When I was in high school, I think I weighed 165, right? So I was a little guy. And we were not supposed to be playing tackle football during physical education, but we did. Anyway, and every time this guy got the ball, he'd basically just lumber around, you know, because no one's tackling that. And I tackled him by myself one day. And I actually didn't go low. I actually went right at the midsection and knocked him backwards, and then he lost his balance.
Then the myth was over.
Yeah.
The aura was...
That was also the class where I got concussed because I was an idiot as a kid as well. If you can't tell from those stories already, I was a bit of a wild...
Apparently so. Tony would throw himself in the path of oncoming larger individuals.
Didn't matter to me.
Scrappy.
And yeah, one time I landed like sideways. I tackled the guy, but I landed sideways. My head was on the ground. His knee came down on the side of my head. Lights out for about 15 seconds. Woke up, didn't know where I was, didn't know who I was. My friends are carrying me. Freaked out, right? Because we're not even supposed to be playing tackle football. And I woke up, I was like, what's going on? Who are you people? And it took like 10 seconds before anything came back. And I had a huge like bump on the side of my head. Never told my mom. Just didn't sleep that night. I was like, I know I got a concussion. I'm just not sleeping tonight.
At least you're old enough to realize that you probably don't want to go to sleep when you
yeah.
have a potential concussion.
Well, the stupid part is I played again the next day.
Yeah, but that's how we are when we're young, right? We're invincible. Duval Doom said, by the way, if we're talking backyard ball, he blasted an ex-girlfriend's new guy in tackle ball, and the guy had to go to the hospital, which is nice. No, we're only talking backyard ball here, Doom, because we don't have a very high threshold of accomplishment here. It's, you're not going to hear about the time I helped get my team to the Final Four with that clutch jumper with 17 seconds left.
Right.
No.
I may have done it on, like, the streak. Right?
Yes. Is, like, it weirder, though? Is it weirder?
I was wicked in a game of 21.
Is it weirder to get yourself tattooed doing something on your body or a complete stranger who you happen to watch on TV but enjoyed rooting for?
Oh, the stranger.
Is it's weirder to get the stranger?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I think I
can't imagine getting anything painted on me.
I get it. I've chosen not to. Like, I reach a point in my life where I say, you know what, I don't have any tattoos now. I'm not going to get one at this point. You know, it'd be like a, you know, just didn't. It wasn't who I was, and so that's fine.
Sure.
But, you know, plenty of people, like, have their the faces of their children tattooed on themselves, right? I don't think there's anything weird about that at all. You know, that's what's
important. I don't think it's weird.
Here.
It's just not what I would do.
I wouldn't get a tattoo of my face on me, you know? Right? But, I mean,
flip that shirt sleeve and it's you.
Hey, winking, right? Just winking at you. That'd be great. I mean, so, but then again, I was not a Division I football player who made a big play in a rivalry game.
Right. I wish I had that kind of story.
Right.
So, you know,
I wish I did to go that way as well.
Yeah. And we're all doing what we're doing because we don't.
Allen Robinson's the kind of guy, I think, that, you know, 30 years from now, there won't be a whole lot of free real estate on him. I think he will slowly, over time, fill in. He seems to have an affinity for the tattoo. So this is, it's not like that he never had one. He decided to get this one done right in the smack middle of his chest, you know, something like that. So,
I led my team in a couple golf tournaments my senior year in high school.
Will we get a snapshot of the leaderboard?
Yeah, I know. I was like, what do you do with that?
I don't know.
I don't know what to do with that.
All right, we'll come back. We'll take a look at that's really funny. Robert Burkhardt, I appreciate the tweet. I don't know who that is next to Facebook.
Please share.
Go look at my timeline. It's hard to describe. There's a picture of Peyton and some other dude with some forehead that's been distorted to where it's about 8 inches tall. They're side by side. I'm not quite sure what the point is. I think he's saying the HGH has made the forehead grow, but I don't know what the other guy's in the picture for. Nevertheless, we'll come back. We'll look at getting to Kuiper's first round of his second mock draft that is out there. Go, as Ryan said, the easiest way to probably find it is go to Mel Kiper's timeline on Twitter and go for the direct link that he tweeted out this morning. So we'll get into that coming up. 641-1010 if you'd like to be a part of the program. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Well, everyone, I just want to say thank you for an amazing 12-year career. This was the part where I was going to ride off into the sunset, but seeing how there's no sunset, I'm just going to ride off.
And that is Jared Allen literally riding off on a horse, calling it a career.
So he called a press conference on a horse? Is that what he did? Or
he just posted a Twitter video, 15 seconds, and he's literally riding off. It's pretty dark, and it's snow everywhere, and riding off in the middle of a field on a horse in a cowboy hat.
Hey, good for Jared Allen, man. He played a long time. Very one of the better pass rushers of the last, you know, 20 years in the National Football League.
Yeah.
Remember the big
issue. Poor horse. That's a big cowboy.
Right. He started in Kansas City, right, and then went to Minnesota. That was the path, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the big issue was his drinking, right? Mm-hmm. Didn't he have – was it DUIs? Did he have a couple of DUI issues? I think he did, right? And I remember the conversation when he was a free agent. Is it worth – I think he was – he didn't get traded to Minnesota, did he? I think he signed there.
Let me check.
Boy, relying on your memory can be a terrible thing. Well, if you're me, it can be a terrible thing. You know, they always talk about those experiments with eyewitnesses and how bad they really are.
Traded to Minnesota.
He was traded to
but
Minnesota.
But it was one of those things where it was like with an extension.
Right, right. Did they want to invest big in him, right,
yeah.
Kansas City, with like 1 year left on his deal, and Minnesota traded for him and then gave him the big contract extension? Was that
it? Yeah, because it was a first-round pick.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a significant deal, to be sure.
February, they placed a tag on him. 2 months later, they traded him, and then he signed a six-year, $70 million deal.
And I think, you know, I don't know exactly what numbers he posted in all those years, but I think you would say he was worth the money, right?
Had at least double-digit sacks every year in Minnesota.
I mean, what else do you want?
So, yeah, but
he came through. He delivered in a big way. Had a question come in right as we were going on the air today. It might have been a response. I think the boys this morning were talking about Kuiper's mock a little bit as well, which, by the way, has the Jaguars choosing in Mel Kiper's latest rendition between Jalen Ramsey and Joey Bosa with the option. I know a lot of people out there are saying, that's crazy, there's no way either one of those guys. Well, you don't know. You really don't, right? Stocks will rise and fall, and we're only talking about the difference between maybe going third overall or fifth overall. It's certainly plausible that they could be there. You don't know what's going to happen with trades and things like that. But the question came in, Ryan and Tony, on the text line this morning that said if the Jaguars were to draft Miles Jack out of UCLA, and we say these names as if everyone knows exactly who we're talking about. Miles Jack, if you don't know who he is, was a phenomenal two-way player at UCLA. Played running back and linebacker. Was the Pac-12 freshman offensive and defensive player of the year his freshman season. Had never been done before. Then settled in as a linebacker and ultimately felt that would be his most impactful position. As we mentioned, Russ Landy, the longtime draft Nick, said he's the best coverage linebacker he's ever evaluated on film, which is saying a lot. Russ Landy's been in the business for a long time. But the question, Ryan and Tony, is if the Jaguars were to draft Miles Jack, what would the starting linebacking core look like, and where would Jack fit into it? What do you think, Ryan?
Well, since we brought that up during the break, just looked up a little. I see two different weights for him. I see 225 and 245. Pretty big difference.
That's a big difference, yes.
So if let's meet him in the middle and say he's 230. Does he hold up on a strong side?
By the way, I just clicked on his profile in Kiper's mock draft. They list him at 232.
Let's put the difference.
Yes.
To me, that's a big ask for a strong side linebacker in this league. I think, you know, thinking out loud here, what they've been doing here defensively hasn't worked. So I would try and just go faster.
Put playmakers
on
the field.
Yeah, I'd play more defensive backs. I'd play more athletic linebackers. You know, use Dan Scuda as more of a pass rusher, short yardage linebacker. And then on third down, they would scoff at you across the hall right now because I've asked this for 2 years here about Puzzlesny coming out field on third down. They feel he still has a value there, but eventually he won't be.
If you've got this guy, and I'm not saying the Jags would, maybe their interest is minimal in Miles Jack. Maybe they don't think he's a good scheme fit or whatever. Maybe they are too concerned with the medicals or just don't know right now. But if he is as good in coverage as suggested, there's no way in hell he's coming off the field on third down. I couldn't see, you know, a nickel package if you draft Miles Jack without him being.
Maybe you take Telvin off the field.
Maybe you do.
He didn't do a lot last year in terms of interceptions and takeaways.
I don't think the weight's been an issue with him. Obviously, he plays the weak side. They try to, you know, pick guys off in front of you and allow you to flow to the ball, so it's not as big an issue. But I'm with you. If he's clearly the best defensive playmaker and you have an eye towards, say, a year from now, him sliding in as people think he projects to be a great coverage middle linebacker who can both play the run very well but be exceptional. I mean, Luke Kuechly is a middle linebacker. It's not his coverage skills are not wasted at the middle linebacker spot. The guy makes game-changing plays. And if the eye was on him, say, a year from now, taking over for Puzzlesny in the middle, Paul's not going to play at a high level forever, right? I mean, I wouldn't have any issue if they went that direction.
Latest report on Jack is that he's not going to work at the combine, which would be 5 months after the injury. And also it was a meniscus that he chose to throttle back and, you know, left school.
Got criticized in some circles for that as well.
Yeah.
His coach, of course, coaches have self-preservation in mind, I think, when they talk about these guys.
Yeah, more like, I mean, maybe from Morris' perspective, the only thing I would look at him is, should, you know, you walked out on your team even though you were hurt. I mean, he just left school.
Right. But if you're done, okay,
yeah.
And his point was, I think Moore was saying he shouldn't even come out for the draft because what Moore said, I've been around this game for a long time, and I've never seen, I've been around like part of the draft process like 25 years, and I've never seen a team take someone on two games of junior tape. Well, guess what? Someone's going to take Miles Jack pretty high.
Yeah, I don't think it should be this team because they're not in a position to wait for a guy who may not be ready to play or may not be at peak efficiency in week one. I don't think, like, they'll always say they have to do what's best for the organization. I'd say forget that. You got to do what's best for you this year.
Boy, that's a bad position to be in. Though I understand where you're coming from because if you don't perform this year, you might not be in position to continue this, what's best for the organization. But I tend to think that they would, if they believe Miles Jack was the best long-term piece for the Jags, and they may not, but if they did, I think they would take him. I think they would, because I think their security level has always been higher than the public perception of the security level. You know what I mean?
It just would go along the lines, it's just been too conservative here.
Is that a conservative pick, though, if you take Miles Jack, or is that a daring pick?
Because I think it's a conservative pick because you're basically admitting that you may not get a lot out of him right away this year when you need to get off to a good start to create some momentum for you returning.
Well, you could make the argument, though, that the conservative pick would be a guy you know is going to be healthy or is healthy right now, and you're going to play it safe. You know, maybe it's a little risky to take a flyer on a guy that you think has tremendous upside, but may not help you for a month or so.
Daring would be Spence, because that also means
that'll be another one.
You need to win this year, and you need a guy who can make an impact this year.
Tony, Miles Jack, could he fit in to the linebacker core as presently constituted in Jacksonville?
Absolutely. Look, I think he's an athletic enough guy that you could put him in any of those three positions, and I think he'd be fine. He's eventually going to be a middle linebacker in the league because that's just what he looks like he is projecting to the NFL. But having him, Puz, and Telvin Smith on the field is better than having Scoot up, Puz, and Telvin Smith, if you ask me. And on third down, to have Telvin Smith and a guy as athletic as Miles Jack out there as your cover linebackers, I think makes a whole lot of sense for this football team. And maybe if you want a little more pass rush on from the linebacker position, you can have Scoot on the field for some of those third down situations. It gives you more flexibility. But I certainly think you can find a place and make a spot for a guy like Miles Jack with that kind of athleticism. It wouldn't scare me off the pick at all. The questions are about, where is his health? And there really are these crazy projections for Miles Jack, considering how little we've really seen of the guy. And you're not going to see him work out this summer. He's just not physically going to be able to do all of it. He'll do some of it, but he can't do all of it. So you really are just relying solely on tape. So for the arguments that people make on, you know, how much effect the combine has or any of that stuff, when Miles Jack goes third, fourth, fifth, sixth, apparently it doesn't matter. Because he's not going to be doing any of that stuff,
right.
And it's going to be all what they think he is based on whatever they saw him do.
In his case, yes, but I do think their influence, that's a whole other line of discussion. But what about the Todd Gurley comparison? Is that not a valid comparison, or the circumstances too different in your
eyes? Well, I do think that helps him, and it helps maybe other guys who've been nicked up in their careers a little bit. It's just a matter of, okay, which team is going to say, okay, Gurley went, what, 10th. Okay, when is sort of the line where you can consider that?
Right, and that's a good point. But
did
tenth,
he get pushed up a little bit this year?
And 10th in an era, Ryan, when it's becoming less and less frequent to see running backs in the first round, never mind, certainly as top 10 picks anymore. So that was still an aggressive selection on Gurley, maybe even in a vacuum, maybe even if he hadn't gotten hurt, although had he not and he put up some big numbers, maybe he would have been a top 5 pick himself. But he certainly didn't go tumbling down the draft boards last year. You're right. I mean, there's got to be a team that feels that he's a fit. Maybe it's, as he's been projected by Kiper, maybe it's a San Francisco, something like that, where they feel like they're not on the brink, right? They've got a new head coach coming in who you would think has some job security because he just got hired in Chip Kelly, and that if they're still, they need to figure out the quarterback situation. If a quarterback isn't there that appeals to them, maybe they feel like they can afford to be a little bit more patient with a guy like that.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people have San Francisco taking a quarterback at
they
that
do.
Spot, but I think Chip Kelly's like Bill O'Brien. He just doesn't like any quarterback.
He thinks he can. Well, I mean, look, he made Nick Foles, at least for a season, a ridiculously efficient passer, right? He had 27 touchdowns and 2 picks.
And then thought that wasn't good enough.
Correct. Knew he wasn't intrinsically good enough, but the system, it felt like the system could put a quarterback in the position, if he played the way Kelly wanted him to, that it could kind of cover up for some of his deficiencies and produce those kind of numbers.
But with Miles Jack next week at the combine, he said he's only doing bench press, but feels like the knee is pretty good. He just doesn't want to push it next week. He thinks that he'll be cleared for all football activities in March. So there
not
is
that far off.
No, there is the potential that, you know, he sets up a pro day where you're going to get to see Miles Jack run and everyone will get a good look at that knee. I don't know if he's going to go through any of the medical eval next week or not.
If he's there, he will.
Okay.
Because if he doesn't, then he probably would be taken off the board.
Well, yeah,
because
I
that
guess.
Means you're a pain in the butt.
But some teams might take
but
him off the
board. But then he'll circle back be a couple weeks before the draft.
And do it again.
Back in Indy for the recheck.
Right, and which he should, because this is the opportunity that ultimately people are going to get a look at your need. They're going to ultimately draft you on the most up-to-date information, but this is the opportunity for everybody to have a look. And like you said, is he going to be seen as too much trouble, more trouble than what he's worth, or is he trying to hide something? Eventually, you've got to show what your knee is at, what point your knee is at. Todd Gurley didn't want, if I'm not mistaken, right, he didn't get checked out, right? He didn't want people pulling on his knee.
Correct.
Didn't really, ultimately, he got checked out at the recheck, and it didn't seem to hurt him at all. So, look, if you're a good enough player, I think they'll find reasons to take you. You know, I think if Jack hadn't gotten hurt and had a reasonable progression from what he had done his freshman and sophomore seasons, we'd probably be not questioning his status as a top five player right now. 641-1010 if you want to get in. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran here with you, along with Fat Tony, and it is Jaguars Today coming back with this date in football and the Honda drive around the NFL on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. On this date in history, 1965, Frank Gifford announced his retirement from the game of football. He would take up broadcasting, be a staple in the Monday night booth for a long time. 1994, on this date, the Shreveport Pirates became the fourth United States team in the Canadian Football League. Shreveport Pirates. You know, Canada was like, wow, we're really making inroads now.
Right.
We're in Shreveport, baby. And I say that as lovingly as I can with the fact that my sister and my three lovely nieces live in Shreveport. It is a godforsaken hellhole of a place. All right, famous birthdays for this date. 1926, Len Ford. I was looking through the birthday list, and I was like, let me find out a little bit more. It seemed like a familiar name. Len Ford was a defensive end with the Cleveland Browns primarily and was a four-time Pro Bowler, four-time first-team All-Pro, and was a Hall of Fame inductee in 1976. Passed away at the age of 46, however, 4 years prior to that, had become good friends with Don Newcomb. I don't know if you guys know about Newcomb's history. Newcomb was an alcoholic who really had an impact his career, and he went on to do speaking engagements, may still do them if he's still around. To this day, I remember going to see him in seventh grade. He came to our school to talk about the evils of alcohol. Newcomb said this about Ford, who he had become good friends with. He said, when interviewed in 1980, that Ford's life was decimated because of alcohol, adding that he became a wino. Stumbling around in alleys, he gave up his life for alcohol. It's kind of a shame because he was still a young man, passing away at the age of 46. George Teague, born on this date. Teague, known best for two moments, one with Alabama when he stripped the ball from Lamar Thomas, and back in the Sugar Bowl in 93, I think it was. And then that play was overturned because there was offsides in Alabama, but it denied a huge offensive play to the Miami Hurricanes in that game. He's also known for hitting T.O. in the back when he went to spike the ball on the star in Dallas' stadium. Also born on this date in 1977, Brian Waters turns 39. Longtime guard, mainly with the Chiefs, six-time Pro Bowler, and a two-time first-team All-Pro. And I think the best running back in the game right now, when healthy, Le'Veon Bell, it turns 24 years young today. So still going strong. Still the top pick, Tony, in a fantasy league if you're taking a running back in the first round. With apologies to Todd Gurley, Devontae Freeman, and anybody else you want to throw in the conversation, give me Le'Veon Bell and that offense, please. Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry presents this date in football. They're on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or you're in the market for a family dentist, call 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Indianapolis Colts linebacker Jonathan Newsom was arrested at his home on two counts of marijuana possession on Wednesday morning after police were called to his home because of a noise complaint from neighbors regarding some loud music. According to Fox59.com, Newsom was suspended two games while he was in college as well for marijuana possession. New Philadelphia Eagles head coach Doug Peterson is trying to figure out what the team may be doing at the quarterback position for 2016 and beyond. 2015 starter Sam Bradford is a free agent, and Peterson seems to be keen on a quarterback he coached in Kansas City. No, not Alex Smith, but Chase Daniel, who Peterson called, quote, more than a backup. Ian Rappaport is reporting that the Miami Dolphins are working on a contract extension with pass-rushing defensive end Cameron Wake, not Olivier Vernon. And a federal judge has rejected the plea deal of former NFL player Darren Sharper regarding a series of date rapes that Sharper pled guilty to last year across four states. U.S. District Judge Jane Malazzo said at a hearing this morning that the, quote, approximately 10-year sentence included as part of the deal Sharper struck with the government deviates too far from federal sentencing guidelines. Those guidelines would have seen Sharper in prison for 15 to 20 years, according to NoLaw.com. Sharper's attorney said that he needs some time to talk with his client and discuss his options going forward, which could include taking the guilty plea off the table. His sentencing hearing is currently set for March 3rd.
Quick note, give credit where credit is due. Mike Garofalo from Fox Sports says Jaguars close to re-signing Chad Henne. I just was told that should happen today.
All right, there you go. A little Jag news from Rhino and Mike. Garofalo, Garofalo?
I always call him Garofalo.
I think you might be right. I called him Garofalo. We had him on for years calling him Garofalo. He probably is used to it being said both ways and might be one of those people that just don't mind how it comes out. But Chad Henne makes plenty of logical sense. He's, look, people say, oh, Chad Henne's terrible. We can't win with Chad Henne. There are plenty of starters you can't win with in this league. He's your backup, and you want your backup to be primarily a guy who knows the offense, who can come in the pinch and not need a lot of preparation time and at least, you know, competently call the plays, get you in and out of plays, and to be a support for a young quarterback, right, and know his role with the team. And Chad Henne fits, checks all the boxes, I think, for the Jags.
Yeah, and this is going to be the first offseason that Chad will be based in Jacksonville. Sold his house in South Florida, so him, you know, he's going to be working with Blake full-time when he gets back from L.A. So I think it's a perfect partnership.
I think it is, too. It makes a ton of sense, and glad to see that it looks like it's on the brink of coming back. Tony, you mentioned in the Around the NFL that the Dolphins are working on a deal with Cameron Wake. Cameron Wake has a big cap figure this year. I want to say it's around $8 million, something like that. And Ian Rappaport was talking about this morning, basically saying that what they're trying to do is work on a long-term deal with Wake to lower that cap number so that they can then at least have the option, if they want to franchise Olivier Vernon. Hate to see Olivier Vernon pulled off the table. I mean, he's already a candidate to get overpaid, but after Vernon, you take one more potential defensive end out of the pool. It's never a very deep pool to begin with. Got to find somewhere to sink these free agent dollars, you know. And I heard your boy Hayes on yesterday with Primetime making a case for Matt Forte. I think it's a fine case. I don't think Forte would, unless he has no better options. I mean, all things being equal, I can't see him wanting to come to Jacksonville. Here's a guy who's toiled, not in obscurity in Chicago, but toiled on a lot of mediocre to bad teams and hasn't had a chance to really go ring chasing. A lot of logical sense that he could go to a place like New England. Green Bay, I think, could be a fit for him. I think Matt Forte, unless the money is drastically different, I think Matt Forte goes title hunting.
Yeah, and what we'll be doing in the case of that story we'll be making the case for a lot of guys over the next month about why the Jaguars should consider them, knowing full well that they're not going to consider the Jaguars. Because I think... I think the way this team finished the season killed them because they're not close. And players see 5-11, they see a team that's not close. They see a team that finished 1-5 down the stretch, and they see a rebuild. And how much are they willing to overpay to get that guy? I think those guys are going to go elsewhere.
Could be the case. You're very soured on the way they finished the last couple of games of the year. This in from Rand Getlin of NFL Network. He reports some details, says that Henne has agreed to terms on a two-year, $8 million deal to remain here in Jacksonville, and incentives are built in as well. So we'll see how that all shakes out. 6-4-1-10-10, but I think we all think it makes logical sense for Chad Henne to return, or hear from the Jags' perspective, certainly, and glad to see Henne. Looks like he's going to get that done for him. All right, let's go to DJ next up on the telephone lines this morning. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Howard, and Fat Tony here with you. Good morning, DJ. How are you?
Good morning, fellas. How are you guys doing this morning?
Fantastic. Good. What's up, buddy?
All right, my question is basically to continue the conversation with your guest yesterday, because I feel like he has some strong points. The Kindici thing, I'm really intrigued by it, because what if he is the best player in this draft? Not rankings or where he should go, just the best player. And with the Jazz on the front line, do you think, if the character stuff checked out, of course, but do you think that's more of a possibility than the Ramseys and the Bosa to get Kindici in here?
I don't think it's more of a possibility. I don't discount it entirely as a possibility, but
no.
When you say discounting the off-the-field stuff, you can't discount it, right? That's got to be part of the conversation. But if the Jags were comfortable, I don't know how they feel about Kindici as a fit. Tony, I've brought up many times, I feel like he should have been more productive in college. The numbers are underwhelming on what he's done. That doesn't mean there aren't examples of guys. Jalen Ramsey, you can look at and say, where are all the turnovers? His numbers should be more
sure.
Overwhelming.
Look, I think I watched a lot of Ole Miss football this year, and when Kindici is on the field...
You beat me to that.
Right, but when Kindici is on the field, your eyes go to him. Like, he is a disruptive force in the middle of the defensive line. Now, what kind of talent is he going up against? I don't know, but he is a disruptive player on the defensive line. It's interesting, with Noah Spence, you had a chance to see him at the Senior Bowl. And so the buzz went from kind of maybe the top of the second round to, well, this guy should be a top 10 pick.
Right.
Based on his potential. They haven't seen Kindici yet. And next week at the Combine, I get the feeling that when scouts get a chance to actually watch this guy and the type of athlete that he is at his kind of size, that the kind of talk that we're hearing about Noah Spence could be the same kind of talk that we start hearing about Robert Kindici, because he is a physical freak. There's nothing outside of that that needs to be said about it. He is a freak of an athlete for a guy his size to be able to do the kinds of things that he can physically do. And the NFL scouts haven't seen him yet in this offseason. So I'm curious to see how the conversation on Kindici changes from a guy who's being talked about right now, basically going 20 to 25, to how much it bumps once they get the opportunity to see him and teams get the opportunity to talk to him for the first time this offseason as well.
Russ Landy, despite having issues maybe nailing the pronunciation of Kindici, offered this when asked about him specifically yesterday.
Kindici, he is a special player. Now, if teams are going to, they're going to do their research, find out about his character. If his character checks out, he's going to be in the running to be the first defensive player taken, because Gerald McCoy is what this kid has the potential to be. And guys like that do not grow on trees. So that's another guy that's going to be in consideration within the top five picks if his character checks out. And I have not gotten enough information to make a clear statement as to whether or not it will or not at this point in terms of character.
And that's a big thing. We don't know. There'll be teams that probably feel better about certain players than others, right? But whether
sure.
It's medicals or off the field or, any of that stuff, there are going to be differences of opinion. So there's not just going to be one. There may be a consensus, but that doesn't mean it's going to be a unanimous one.
No, and you only have to, we say it every year, but only one team has to love him.
Right.
Right, for him to be a top 10 pick. And
only
I,
one guy really has to love him.
Right, and look, I don't know. I think it's really tough to evaluate character with these. I think it's a really tough thing to do, and teams have been burnt, and teams have been rewarded for gambling on guys that have character issues. It has worked both ways, so I don't think there's a set way to handle those kinds of things. I can tell you that I think Robert Kindici is a really, really talented guy, and that if he can keep his head on straight, I do think he's worthy of a top 10, top 5 pick in the NFL draft. I just don't know that he is going to be able to keep his head on straight, and that's the question that somebody's going to have to answer, and they're going to be held accountable for it as a general manager drafting that guy or Noah Spence or anybody like that. It doesn't matter how physically talented they are. In the end, you're gambling on that talent overweighing whatever off-field issues you can protect them from.
Well, what's hurting him is that the character concern is so recent.
Right.
You know, he knew he was going to come out for the draft, yet he couldn't help himself.
Smoking pot. He fell out of the hotel window, right?
Yeah.
Made a 15-foot fall, which questions just how obliterated he may have been at that point in time. But it's the timing of it, Ryan,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and you compare it, defensive line, you compare it to Spence, who has a character concern, but that's further away, and then he, sort of paid his penance by getting kicked off a Big Ten team and went to Eastern Kentucky. This with Ole Miss, this is going to be more fresh. These teams are going to want more answers because they don't know some of the specifics.
Right. Has he changed his ways other than making a statement saying this is not indicative of my true character and da 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 da? Well, like you said, it's the most recent thing we had to go on. You're right about Spence, at least. Once he got kicked out, he went that route, he sucked it up, and as far as we know, that he did not get into any other kind of issues. Like, he got kicked out, again, permanently banned from not only Ohio State, but Big Ten play, has done his best to rehabilitate his stock.
One more on character is there's going to be the concrete character stuff, records, or arrest records, suspensions, and then you're going to hear all this other stuff. He doesn't have great practice habits.
Right.
He doesn't play. Well, that to me, that's at the top of the gray area where teams are going to say, well, he'll practice hard for us.
Right. So, some do, and you also have to wonder about, the relationships with coaching staffs and stuff. You know what I mean? I think certain coaches, if you've done that coach wrong, depending on who the coach is, they may hold grudges. I don't know how Hugh Freeze would deals with Robert Kendici or how he feels about basically getting stood up for the bowl game because this guy put himself ahead of his teammates and things like that. And will that color his reactions when he's questioned about it from NFL personnel people? Impossible for us to say at this point in time. By the way, we don't talk much college ball on the program. It's not what it's designed to do. But what the hell is going on with the Tennessee Volunteers? See another one coming out there? I thought it was like the same story. And then it was a brand new incident. I'll hit that up when we come back here in a moment. We got to take a timeout. Question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships is this. In honor of Allen Robinson getting an image of himself catching a ball over a Michigan defensive back emblazoned on his rib cage with a tattoo, what would your choice be if you were tattooing your greatest individual athletic moment on yourself? Well, what would that tattoo look like? Having a little fun with that today. You can weigh in on Twitter or on the Jaguars Today Facebook page with Ryan O'Halloran and Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Hey, you just described yourself on the break as a very positive person. And considering we're just getting our first taste of JT, I've got to say you've held up very well this morning in that department.
It was worth the wait.
It was for you, because you knew it was coming. But all right, is this like a New Year's thing for you? Are you trying to be more zen-like with us on the program?
No.
Nah, I didn't think so. Nobody really pissing you off this week?
That's the thing.
That's probably what it was.
There was
right?
this driver in front of me today. She had no clue where she was.
What did she do?
The yield sign doesn't mean you have to stop.
See, here it goes. That didn't take much. I am not.
And then these name tags.
Tell us how you think about the name, or how you feel about the name tag. Apparently, can I go inside the business?
Sure.
They've got the new system where you've got to check in here. Duval Doom had to do it. He was very proud to get a tag with his name on it the other day. But you have to check in if you're a visitor to the building, to the Jaguars Today studios, that would fit as well, because you're not here every single day for the program. So based on the amount that we have posted on this filing cabinet, about 4 or 5 weeks ago, you started having to get these ID badges when you came in the building. And as a form of protest that we all, Tony and I, enjoyed, we're collecting them on the side of the filing cabinet. You would peel them off your jacket, stick them on there. And then apparently when you left last week, they have a checkout procedure.
Yeah, when did that come in?
I don't know. Sometime in the it's the first week they instituted it, and last week. And there may have been a message passed along to the director of Jaguar Broadcasting, Joe Fortunato, tell that Ryan O'Halloran fellow that if he doesn't check out in the future, he will not be checking back in. And I want to see how this one goes, Tony, at about 12:05 today, personally. I'm looking forward to it.
This falls under the pick your battles thing. I wear a stupid pass on the side of my arm, and I'll walk out like I usually do.
There you go. He's picking his battles, folks. I'm not sure what that means. If he's fighting the power.
The battle would be adding to my collection.
Yes, that would be the full-on display of defiance if you add it to your collection.
Yeah, I mean, the other defiance was like walking in a side door when I would go straight to the media room.
That's true.
Yeah, but
you could do that.
But I can't do that now because I have to come through the door to get into the offices.
Correct.
Because they don't figure I'll steal credit card number, so I got to check it.
Well, you're currently wearing it upside down. So I think you should continue to go with it upside down, allow yourself to be scanned, and say, hey, buddy, I'm here. This is an upgrade. Flip your machine upside down if it can't read it. So we'll see if you're required to take that off. We don't venture into the world of college ball and all these various stories very often. I'm not going to try to spin this to say this has got some tangential connection to the NFL. It's just unbelievable how many of these we've seen. You've got the the Title IX investigation. Is that going on right now? They've got all the allegations that there's been a systematic series of basically an attitude of wanting to cover up and downplay crimes of a sexual nature on the Tennessee campus, what have you. Just 2 days ago, Tennessee football player was arrested in Pinellas County, Florida, offensive lineman Matt Crowder, because he was trying to arrange a liaison with what he believed to be a 14-year-old girl straight out of Dateline NBC, right, Chris Hansen. They had an authorities posing as a 14-year-old, and thankfully, man, they do this, but imagine how many people out there how many of them are not posed, how many of these slip through the cracks, how much deviance is going on. So this guy is trying to get together. He sent, naked pictures of himself, again, trying to set up a liaison with a 14-year-old girl. That was bad. That is bad. It's terrible. Today, word comes out that a Tennessee football player was arrested, a separate one. This one, defensive tackle Alexis Johnson, a JUCO transfer who just got there, by the way, in January. But nevertheless,
nice vetting, Butch.
He's still on the team. He's your responsibility. He was arrested last night and being held in a Knox County jail, or was being held on a 12-hour hold, charged with aggravated assault and false imprisonment. Apparently, a woman who he had dated at two previous instances. I'm assuming they dated on and off two separate times. And he tried to, convince her to sleep over, putting it into, generic terms here, and she wanted nothing to do with it. And according to reports, he appeared to be really punching her in the face. Her lip was busted up. He choked her to the point of where she was going to pass out on several instances. And it started all by him blocking the door, saying, "You think I won't blank you up?" And then apparently proved that he was willing to blank her up. What a prince. Unbelievable, man. I mean, look, it could just be a run of bad luck for Tennessee. I don't know. But too much with the negative headlines, man. I tell you, I saw that headline. I'm like, wait a minute. I thought this was about soliciting a fort. Oh, wait, this is a brand new one? Okay, back-to-back days. I hate to see what's coming out tomorrow for the Tennessee Volunteers. Hopefully nothing in that regard. A couple of other, we talked about Kiper with the mock draft. He had the Jags choosing between Ramsey and Bosa, had him going Ramsey. We talked about that a little bit last week. If ideally, who's the guy that's sitting there at number five for you, for the Jags? Every player in the draft.
Ramsey.
Yeah.
Because I just think it's such a desperate need. And that's right now. If they find a free safety that is serviceable, then they can still draft Ramsey and play him at corner. But I think he checks a lot of the boxes they need, which is they need somebody who can get around the football.
Pro Football Focus a few days ago, I think, did 3 days ago, as a matter of fact, did their list of the top 75 free agents that they grayed out for 2016. Obviously, a lot of these guys are going to get franchise tag or will re-sign with their club before free agency opens up. But let me just skip past some of the early ones and then go to some of the ones that I think are Jaguar centric or of interest to Jaguar fans. Von Miller at number one, we know he's not going to get here. Alshon Jeffrey will be back in Chicago. Josh Norman, more than likely, right. Not
Jax, baby.
He's coming. You got
he's
him?
Coming.
All right, he's not coming. Muhammad Wilkerson is not getting out of New York either. Number five, they rank Olivier Vernon then, number five. That's pretty, you know, good praise.
Yeah, and that's why today's development about Wake is germane to the Jaguars.
They have to be sitting there, Miami, thinking, wait, if he is clearly the best guy available out there, and we're going to lose him, we'd have to report, well, yeah. Why don't we just keep him, right? Yeah. We've got first crack at it, so if they can clear things up, keeping Dominican Sue in the middle of that defense, have Wake on one side, coming off a torn Achilles now. You don't know how effective he'll be, and that's another factor. I'm sure they're saying to Cameron Wake, look, nobody's paying you $8 million this year
or whatever it is,
coming off a torn Achilles. So
we'll guarantee that, but over a couple of years.
Right. Well, you'll get the money, but we're going to spread it out. You got to take a significant reduction in your cap number, which shouldn't matter to Cameron Wake, I don't think. So Olivier Vernon, who what they wrote, Vernon broke out in a contract year with a 92.5 overall grade that ranked behind only Khalil Mack and Von Miller among edge defenders. He has a league-high 57 total pressures over the final 8 weeks of the season. I often am guilty of it. You focus on the sack total, right? I think he had 7.5 this year, something like that. And you're like, how can this guy be worth, you know, this humongous contract with 7.5 sacks? Didn't he break out a couple of years ago when he had 11, right? But most pressures in the league, second half of the season, and pressure long-term is going to be probably the key indicator you want, Ryan, because, you know, sacks are going to fluctuate.
That the way he finished the season and his age makes him a commodity. And with the cap going up like it is, more teams are being smart about their cap space. That leaves the Jaguars trailing because, you know, they have all this money. They just might not be able to get the guys they want because it took a while, but teams are starting to figure out, if we have a premium guy, we got to hold on to him, even if we have to overpay him a little bit.
There's a report out by USA Today, a writer with USA Today, indicated their Giants coverage. I guess they have, like ESPN does, they have a reporter for every team.
Mm-hmm.
Giants Wire is the USA Today Giants coverage section, and they reported that Jason Pierre-Paul is unlikely to re-sign with New York. A source told the USA Today's Christian Dyer that all signs point towards the Giants letting Pierre-Paul test free agency. As of right now, he isn't going to be returning. Let's assume that's the case. Pro Football Focus ranks him the sixth best available free agent. Isn't that a major red flag, Ryan, if the guy with the claw hand...
That's the red flag.
Right, that's a major red flag, but also the fact that, again, he fits that profile, mid-20s, pass rush is such a commodity. Tony, do you think it's a case of the Giants saying...
One-down player.
Right, yeah, well, maybe he is a one-down player, but what do you think it is a case of with the Giants, if this, in fact, report is accurate?
Whatever the relationship is between the two is falling apart, and maybe they had the closest look at him, you know, with that hand and what it was going to be. I think he played in 8 games last year, had the 1 sack. He was still pretty good against the run. He's still a really athletic guy, you know, watching him the little bit I did last year, but he wasn't the same guy that you've seen. And, look, the Giants have a ton of cap space, this offseason. So they could keep him if they wanted to. And letting that guy walk, I think, tells you at least what they feel about where he is physically with that hand and his ability to get after the passer. He's a guy who is capable of being a 15-sack-a-year guy. I think he's still athletic enough to make a handful of plays a year for you, but I don't know if he'll ever be a double-digit guy.
Is that hand going to get better? You know, like he tweeted out the picture of the hand after the season where the middle finger is, like, swollen twice as large as a typical finger would be. And, I mean, it looked like a hideous lobster claw kind of thing.
Well, hopefully his goal for that picture wasn't to tell teams, I'm better.
Right. Well, hey, look, everything's good. Because if you are, well, how bad was it? I mean, the reason I ask is because with the hand looking that way, is he always going to have to play basically with a club on his hand? You know, with a hand completely wrapped.
I would think, because once you put your other fingers at jeopardy, there's no, like, I mean, what's the structure, what's the support?
I don't know.
So, like, us armchair general manager and doctors in here, we're raising these concerns. imagine what these other teams are. It's going to be fascinating to see what the market is.
Right. That will be the thing, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to sign Jason Pierre-Paul if the Giants don't. He's not going to get the kind of money that he would have commanded had he had his, you know, typical type season.
And if you get 48 hours into the signing period, which would be March 11th, and he's still out there, well, then obviously it's because he thinks he's worth more than what he's hearing.
Sure. And I would think that's a likely scenario, mm-hmm. by the way, to play out if the Giants don't bring it back. Kelechi Osemele was ranked as Pro Football Focus' seventh best. Bill Barnwell actually suggested him as a possibility for the Jags if they, wanted to go with A.J. Cann, slide him over to center, and then look for a guard to upgrade Zane Beatles, maybe go after Kelechi Osemele with some of that cap space. Eric Berry was ranked eighth. We don't think he's getting out of Kansas City. Malik Jackson was ranked ninth. I know a lot of Jag fans would like to see him here in Jacksonville. And then I'll skip down to Eric Weddle at 12. Weddle, according to Pro Football Focus, graded out at 85.9 in coverage. What does that mean? Well, among safeties in 2015, it was second best in the National Football League. That's what you're looking for in your safety here. You're not looking for a downhill thumper. Eric Weddle's been an all-around versatile guy. I'd prefer Eric Berry because of the age factor, but again, I don't think he's going to be available. I would take Eric Weddle in a heartbeat with an eye on he's starting for the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm. I think Weddle and Forte are in the same category, one-sided interest.
Could be.
If I'm Weddle, I mean, there's probably a couple teams out there that are closer to the playoffs or in the playoffs that could use him, knowing full well he doesn't have a lot of years left.
Who would you want to overspend on more, though? I'd want to overspend more on Weddle than I would on Forte. I wouldn't mind the Jags overspending on either, but if you're going to wildly overspend on one, that would be the guy.
Yeah, because he would be an automatic every down, every play starter.
Right, I think he'd be much more impactful for this football team. And that, I think, is, you know, you're right. We look at it from a Jags perspective. Who would they like and who would fit in here? You got to look at it from the totality of the picture. Well, who else is pursuing these guys and how are they going to view this football team? Overpay them, baby. Let's go overpay Eric Weddle, please. And then Sean Smith, that was the last one I'll mention, came in 13th. Barnwell also mentioned him as a possible target for the Jags, a 6'3" corner who was been basically phased out because of Marcus Peters in Kansas City.
Yeah. And then you're looking at safeties. 2 years ago, this team did have some interest in Gibson from Cleveland, but he was restricted then if they didn't tender him, which they did. Plus, he's come off an injury, so he could be another guy to consider as plan B at free safety.
Here's the issue, according to Pro Football Focus, because his name has come up quite a bit. They say about Tayshaun Gibson, who they ranked 38th among all free agents. Keep in mind, Weddle was 12th, and Barry was in the top 10. In every free agent market, there are players who have fantastic highs but dreadful lows. Gibson might be the best example of that this offseason. He was a top 10 coverage safety 2 years ago. He dropped all the way into the bottom 10 in the entire league in 2015. So which guy are you getting?
You know, who knows? I mean, like the coverage statistic is such an absurd metric because in this defense, how much are you covering? How much are you reacting to the pass? I mean, that kind of thing.
Well, we don't know. I don't know what goes all into what Pro Football Focus's methodology is.
And they don't know how to grade Brandon Linder. We know that.
Well, okay. So, but, I mean, at least they attempt to come up with a scientific, in their mind, a methodical process that grades everybody. Look, you can't know what everyone's responsibility is on a given play. But
they pretend to know, but we know that.
I don't know if they pretend to know. I think they admit that they're, at times it's difficult to know what their full responsibility is. You don't like Pro Football.
I've tried to bite my tongue through this whole thing.
Yeah, you're not a fan of Pro Football.
But, there's so much data that contradicts what the truth is. So it's like you can't trust. I mean, same with Barnwell. You can't trust what he says about the Jaguars. He doesn't know. He didn't even mention Brandon Linder yesterday.
No, but he wasn't talking about needing to upgrade the right guard
position.
He needed
to update guard in general.
I didn't read it that way. I read it more specifically left guard. We talked about it. Anyway, we'll move on. Come back. Fan feedback question of the day asking you if you were going to go the Allen Robinson route and get something tattooed on your body to commemorate your greatest athletic achievement, what would that tattoo look like? We'll come back with some of the responses to that on the other side with Ron O'Halloran and Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. It is Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Nice! Very good. That's a solid poll right there. Who sings this?
This is Jason Aldean.
Oh, is it? I've heard of him. Brent Martineau's a big fan. You're going to hear some Aldean on Monday. Martineau's going to sit in? Is that what's happening on Monday?
That's the plan, yeah.
Apparently it takes me taking a day off for Brent to want to come by the studio. I'm beginning to think that my well-deserved reputation is catching up with me these days, Ryan. Nobody likes me.
What's the over-under on Brent sitting in this chair? I go 10:01.
Sitting in, oh, you mean the time?
Yeah.
Actually, be it. Who knows, man?
Right. Does he make it in the first segment of the show?
I hope so. I hope so.
I think he comes in, at least bring you some breakfast, right?
Yeah.
Brent would always come in, quite often.
That rotisserie chicken.
Right. Stop by Winn-Dixie. Guys, I would have been here on time, but I had to go to Winn-Dixie. I don't know. Maybe pack your lunch, dude. Just pack it the night before or the morning of. He would come, right, rotisserie chicken, or he'd have something, like a full meal from Winn-Dixie.
Oh, yeah.
Sides and everything. He wasn't just nibbling on some fast food.
I saw a tweet here about the next show is going to be live from Daytona.
Dirt. Kidding me? It's going to be terrific.
How do you feel about those cars?
Terrific. They're going to be terrific, and they're going to run around the track, and it's a terrific facility, and it's phenomenal. How do I feel? That's what I feel about those things.
They'll
do a terrific job with it down there at Daytona. Daytona's fun. You ever been to Daytona? You ever been to a race?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you like it? You enjoy it? Were you covering it? Or you just...
Yeah, I covered it. I think it was the 08 500. Everybody should go.
By the way, today's the 15th anniversary of Dale Sr. Dying at the Daytona 500. So tomorrow's the 15th anniversary of T-Wig and I filling in for Frank. We had a show all planned. I don't know what the hell we were going to talk about, but it wasn't NASCAR. And then T-Wig and I were probably the most unlikely duo to prepare a NASCAR-only show for you. And we did 3 hours on Dale. We got educated more than anything else that day. It was interesting. It was fun looking back on it, not the circumstances that caused it.
And look at you now, Mike. You're doing fantasy NASCAR, right?
Oh, look at me. I was. Well, I don't know if we're doing it this year. I'm playing fantasy NASCAR. I don't know if they wanted to do a full season of fantasy NASCAR.
It's a long season.
Well, it's a long season, and it's every Saturday morning. It's only an hour show, and it's easy, but starting in about 2 weeks, I'm coaching soccer on Saturday morning, so that's like a, you know, a 10 or 12 week run, and then you get into football season and it gets a little hairy at times. So I don't know, that one may die on the vine, but I did make some website's list of the 30 must follow Twitter handles if you're a fantasy NASCAR player. All it took was about 10 episodes of our fantasy NASCAR show running last year on Sirius for me to crack the top 30. So I'm thinking there's probably about 10 useful ones in there and a lot of filler if I made the list. Today, speaking of filler, we kind of had one of those days with the question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Allen Robinson got a collegiate highlight of his own tattooed on his rib cage. And so we asked you if you were going to get your most impressive athletic accomplishment tattooed on your body, what would that tattoo look like?
From Colby, we got being from St. Louis, definitely get Mike Jones tackling Dyson 1 yard short at the goal line in Super Bowl 34. Not sure how that's your accomplishment, Colby, but tattoo away, buddy. From Eric, when I pitched the shutout in slow pitch softball, hashtag highly athletic, hashtag memorable moment. And you must have had a whale of a defense behind you, buddy. For pitching a shutout.
That could be a trollish comment. I'm not sure about that.
But from Richard, the 299, I got lucky and bold one time. The tattoo would be the one pin left standing in the last frame. Boy, would that be aggravating. From Daniel, a baseball stitches included with 17K on the sweet spot and the date below it. From Ocho Fisho, blocking a Roy Jones Jr. jumper in a pickup game in Pensacola in the early 90s.
That's a whole separate category, like brush with athletic greatness,
right?
Like actual playing pickup sports against professional or collegiate athletes.
Yeah, I'm not sure that this next one qualifies as that, considering I don't know where he went to college. But Black Dog said pick six off a pass from Sam Kavaris in high school. He denies it. Said he remembers burning me for a touchdown, and Irish Jaguar, I'll retweet this.
Dude, was that at Maryland or Clemson?
I'm not sure.
That was high school.
Yeah.
High school, I'm sorry.
Yeah, not sure where he went to college. But from Irish Jaguar, he tweets a whole story about his greatest athletic accomplishment. I'll retweet it. Basically, it's got a bunch of like karate language that I can't say.
He stepped up in class in a karate tournament, knocked out the dude in 15 seconds, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a heck of a story.
And then the guy went on to win the high. He was in two classifications. He went on to win the entire higher classification.
No, it's a good story.
Despite the fact that Irish Jag. Does Irish Jaguar strike you as some stealthy martial arts dude?
No.
Me either.
But, like, the guy I know, I have a friend of mine that's a black belt, and I would never. Like, of all the friends I have, like, this is the guy that would be towards the bottom of my list of friends on, this is the dude who's going to do martial arts.
Yeah.
There's no way I would expect it of him. But he does. He's been doing it since he was a kid, and he's really, really good at it.
All right, off topic from what we're talking about, as Maurice said, sorry to be off topic today on the Facebook page. Two questions. We'll go quickly on this, Ryan. If they Jags sign Eric Weddle or Tayshaun Gibson, and due to the deep safety draft class, is it a deep safety draft class?
I don't know yet.
Okay. I know the kid from Ohio State is highly regarded, but and I saw one mock that had him falling to the Jags in the second round. I've seen him more likely as a first rounder. Do you think that would preclude passing, drafting Ramsey, or would they go a different direction? Is signing Eric Weddle now? Tayshaun Gibson's a younger player. I don't think signing Eric Weddle to me would, if they felt Ramsey was the best player available, that they'd pass on him.
Correct, especially because of Jalen's experience playing corner.
Correct. And also, if Noah Spence interviews well at the Combine Pro Day and proves to be Caldwell or Bradley that past issues won't happen again, would you take him at number five? Look, first of all, they're not going to interview him at the Combine. They spent a week with the guy. They know now. I would believe that they know what their comfort level is with Noah Spence. So right now, they probably have a jump on most of the field in that department, that they got to spend extended time with him. In fact, I was told that Gus was going to spend extra time specifically with Noah Spence on their last day, on that Friday before the Senior Bowl game. So what came of that, I don't know. Then they should keep that close to the vest. But I have a feeling right now, Ryan, they know if he's on their draft board or not on their draft board.
Absolutely.
Right.
And, you know, if it takes that one instance, that's why that trip was worth it.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Because of this player, it could really, that could be the most significant thing out of a 3-year period if this guy turns in, because people are talking about him being the best pass rusher in the draft. Now, I know they've come across some other guys that they ended up bringing in, and I'm not trying to slight any of those players, but, I mean, if Noah Spence is what he's cracked up to be just by the film watchers, that and he ends up being a Jacksonville Jaguar, it could be the most significant thing they've gotten out of that.
And even if he doesn't, and they say, probably not right for us.
Right, that's then, significant as well.
Then yes.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, because, you know, again, he went from being a fringy first, second-round prospect in a lot of people's eyes, one good week of practice, and everybody all of a sudden has been able to assess in their mock drafts that, everything's all good with him because he shot from, like, 30th to 5th overall in some of these mocks. It's been funny to watch. What do you have coming up over the next few days?
We'll have in Sunday's paper, I talked to the NFLPA at the Super Bowl about what are their thoughts on rookie minicamps in the wake of the Fowler injury. I'll have what some of their comments were, and then I'll have a combine primer, some names to watch, et cetera, et cetera. And then starting next Wednesday, throughout the week, I'll be up in Indianapolis.
All right, you and Tony will be up there. We'll try to check in with you maybe on Friday or Thursday and Friday next week, and hopefully Tony throughout the week. I think you're going up on Tuesday. Have you gotten your
Tuesday afternoon? Yeah. Tuesday,
so you'll be here for Tuesday's show.
Should be,
yeah. Monday show with Brent Martin. I'll probably do Tuesday show with me, and then we'll get reports from the Combine the rest of the week from multiple sources on the ground there. All right, that does it for us today. Thanks for playing along. For Joe Fortunato, for Tyler Devitt, for Fat Tony and Ryan O'Halloran, I'm Mike Dempsey. We are signing off for Jaguars today. XL Primetime live at the Daytona International Speedway. Coming up next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Rick Flip.
That's great job!